But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to The Advice Show. I'm Zach, a reporter at New Model Advisor, and today I'm joined by fellow NMA senior investments reporter Nicola Blackburn, as well as John Hawkins, principal business consultant at Bravura Solutions. Listeners might know Bravura is a software provider that powers the advisor platforms or your pension products. Hi, John. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me along.
Great to have you. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. My first question is, you know, what is the state of diversity in the industry at the moment, and how can we improve this?
Yeah, I think as a white cisgender man, it's quite strange that, you know, I end up talking about diversity as much as I do these days, but I've kind of taken a real passion on the fact of calling out where I think we need to do better, because if people don't stand out and say, I will need to do better, no one is going to, and everyone's going to be complacent and look anywhere. Yeah. And, you know, I have diverse characteristics, neurodiverse, LGBT plus, but I can hide those, so I can still code switch. And that makes, for me, I can blend in. Other people can't blend in like I can. Not that I should have to blend in, but it's a privilege I have. And so when looking at the entire sort of financial services and wealth space, we have to do a lot better. And I say we have to do a lot better because we've kind of made a start. We've kind of acknowledged there's an issue, and we need to decide how we make it a non-issue for the next generations coming, because we need to move quicker, we need to move faster, and we need to get the benefits that diversity and inclusivity bring to businesses and to thought processes into our organizations much quicker, much better, and level that playing field. So I think we've made a start. I think we need to do a lot better. And I'm slightly worried that with the political environment as it is at the moment, firms who were being brave are now tiptoeing back from that courage. And I think most firms need to stand their guard and do what's right, even when it's not it's slightly less popular or a little bit more difficult than perhaps it was before.
Why does it strike you, John, that some firms are maybe stepping back on D&I when previously they weren't? What are you seeing?
A few things. So cost of living is causing firms to restrict budgets and cut back on staff and similar. The political climates in Western world in particular, you've got emergence of far right and to some degree far left commentators who are very loud and very, how best to put this, we do like a proverbial bogeyman, and whether that's gay asylum seekers that get picked on, who are the most tiny percentage of a problem, or trans people who are being victimized all over the place at the moment, or a whole host of other diverse background people, or the use of the word woke as a slur. These things are extremely unhelpful, and firms need to be able to stand fast and actually say, well, hang on a minute, no, it's the right thing to do. Mm. And in the face of that criticism, and some firms are not standing firm in the face of that criticism, so it starts to say, well, it's lip service only, and that isn't a good place to be.
Yeah, you mentioned there that, you know, the economic climate is such at the moment, we've got a cost of living crisis, you know, most of the firms that that we write about obviously have faced huge headwinds recently because of whether it be COVID, whether it be the sort of financial chaos of last year, whether it be so many things. A lot of listeners might be listening to this and thinking, well, okay, this is all well and good. I'd like my firm to be diverse. I'd like to have more diversity in the industry. But when there are economic headwinds such as we're facing, is it the case that DE&I at the moment is possibly one of the first things to get cut? And is this a problem of understanding, you know, firms not understanding the urgency of the situation you're describing?
I think that's probably correct, is firms perhaps aren't understanding the long-term view, and also perhaps not understanding this is something for a longer term and will impact on them as an institution. I think we've also got the situation where it is convenient or inconvenient to do things. And in this particular situation at the moment with cost of living, etc., it's an easy cut. It is an easy thing to do. Whether it is the right thing to do in the medium to long term is debatable. One of the other areas, of course, in the whole ESG circle is the environmental piece. And we can see in particular there are areas in this industry where the environmental is much further down the list of priorities. There was the protest outside of the conference. There was that yesterday, picking up that firms were not taking their environmental duties appropriate. Thing is, we will get schemes, pension schemes, that is, or investors investing in environmental problematic stocks and businesses because they turn returns. But in the long term, if we start having more climate issues, that is actually going to cost us far more in loss of returns, economic chaos, etc., than potentially they're getting there. And I think the same is true of social issues such as diversity and inclusivity.
Mm-hmm. John, there was something you said actually on your LinkedIn a little while back that I wanted to bring up. You said there was so much unlearning that needs to be done within workplaces and within society to deconstruct decades of unhelpful biases that hold us all back, you said. I was wondering, throughout your career, what are the kind of common ways that you've seen unhelpful biases rear their head? And I think beyond that kind of truce and I think stereotype we have of financial services, which is, you know, long lunches with a lot of blokes.
It annoys me, as sometimes my LinkedIn posts betray my frustration in some of what we do. When talking about unlearning, we really good example is someone who remained nameless, but she will apologize when butting in front of somebody or having an opinion or wanting to do something. And there's absolutely no need to apologize at all. But she's learned to feel inferior when actually she shouldn't. Absolutely. You know, the other thing is, of course, where people cut across people's conversations in calls or Teams meetings. There's not understanding, perhaps, they are a little bit more timid or uncomfortable with Teams calls or Teams chat or something similar. And we always have this loudest is best approach as well. So there's a number of things here. We've got the fact that certain people feel they need to apologize. Why do they need to apologize? Stop apologizing. We should call it out when we see people apologizing for no particular good reason, say, will you stop apologizing, and help them to change their behavior. Because it puts everybody else in a mindset that for some reason they're not worthy, for whatever reason. And within the sort of calls and things like that, a really simple way is, if you are seeing people being overspoken or not included, is what we can do as other people on the call is to hand that microphone back to the individual. So it might be, Nicola, I didn't quite hear what you said there. Could you just repeat what you were saying? Or Nicola, could you just could you just let Zach speak, because I really need to understand what he's saying. So there's ways you can sort of throw the microphone or throw that power back to that person in a quite a friendly but deliberate way. And so there are things you can learn and unlearn. And I think that's really important for everybody that's an ally and everybody that has friends and family that they see struggling in one way or shape or form, or they want to make things better for their sons and daughters going forward, is how can we make things different? What behaviours do we need to challenge?
So what we often see from firms as well is that we see more diversity, more women, more people of colour lower down the pyramid of the firm. And then as soon as you get up to the top, prime example is probably, the amount of women that are CEOs of advice businesses, is that number is strikingly few compared to the men that are there. Why do you think there is this ceiling? And how can we combat it?
There's two things, I think. One is when people are, or firms are selecting their leaders, they're looking for levels of experience and exposure. And that the way we have things at the moment is that people of colour and women and different types of background people have things to give, but they can't get past certain levels because they can't get that experience, or they can't get that exposure, or they didn't go to the right school, or they didn't go to the right university, or whatever it might be. They are perfectly competent, perfectly capable, and they should be celebrated and pushed forward for what they are. And I think the way to challenge a lot of that is to actually sort of, there's two terms really, mentor and sponsor, and I prefer the sponsor thing. It's you actually pull people into meetings, you pull people into events. The event I've been at for the last few days, I very much would like to see them offering free tickets for junior or people in the firm who would not usually have an opportunity to go to these events, so they can get that experience, they can build their networks, they can have the opportunities that perhaps others are able to get with less effort. And so I think that's sort of where a lot of that ceiling comes from. And the other problem we have as well is because we end up with so few people having those top jobs, being women, people of colour, LGBT plus people, disabled people, etc., we then have a much smaller pool of talent that then gets sort of overpressed. So you end up with sort of, a few names to just sort of colour, boards so that they look a little bit more diverse, whereas that's not really what we want to be doing. We want to be increasing the pool. We want to be increasing the pool of talent and bringing people through. So how, as seniors, you've climbed to the top of your flagpole, you've climbed to the top of your company. How do you hand that ladder down to the next generation? How do you get people within your organization that don't have the same social advantages perhaps you have to be able to, right, how do you spot that talent and nurture that talent and bring that talent to the fore? And that's where I think organizations need to concentrate. And it's how do you fast track people through? How do you get them to get that experience? How do you train them and coach them and sponsor them into meetings? And so you can very easily over time is you can actually pass onto them so they can take more responsibility and therefore be leaders of the future. And so it's something we need to accelerate. It's not going to happen overnight, but we need to accelerate how it changes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the way to do it.
So having a kind of diverse, exco or a diverse sort of senior representation is half the push, really.
I think so, but you have to get there, and you can't just bring people in to provide a wash. They have to be people of substance, people with experience. Otherwise, and we can't have tokenism. because that undermines the whole push. You know, oh, I'm the token woman, or I'm the token, I'm token gay on the board, whatever that might be. You need to be there because you are the right person to be there. But what we need to do is make sure that the workforce has equal access to the top jobs. We make it so that we level the playing field, so that actually the people that can really make a difference to a firm, and I can actually probably push firms to the next level, have the opportunity to get through those barriers that they already have in front of them.
Yeah, you mentioned tokenism there, which I think is a really important point, because it can mask sort of a lot of it can be an attempt to change, or seen as an attempt to change, when actually it's not really helping that much. With that in mind, what practical steps would you say that firms can do now? What would you be happy with, basically, to improve diversity, particularly at those senior levels, that would not be tokenism?
It is that sponsorship. To talk to tokenism, and give an example, and this isn't in financial services, but it's in a professional setting. It's a professional firm, and they have a trans woman and a Muslim woman, and they see that as them being diverse, but they sort of sit in the corner, and that's kind of the diverse part of the company. And that's tokenism. That's totally tokenism. They aren't embraced in the organization. You know, they don't have any way to be brought through. Equally, promoting people just because they are a woman, person of color, LGBT plus, whatever, but don't have the skills, that breeds resentment. And it also means that you aren't being honest in what you're doing. So bringing the next generation through, and this is all about succession planning, it's all about talent planning, and if you do it properly, it can be very, very successful. You look at your workforce, and you look at them, and you can say, well, okay, who could be our stars? How do we pull people through the organization? How do we pull those diverse talents through? How do we assess those diverse talents? And how do we give them what they need to get to the top? You know, what is it they require? Is it more access to meetings, more access to shadowing, more access to networking events? What is it that would make them come through? Is it, you know, confidence building? Do they just feel inferior because of society's ways that have been brought through? How do we move that on? And I think there's a lot of ways of doing it, and there's people far more experienced than I in doing this. But we have to change our mindset, and we have to go, it's not good enough. We need to work out how we get that breadth of thought. How do we bring the generations through? And the key thing is here, we aren't saying we're taking a piece of pie off of, for example, the straight white men. Not saying that at all. What we're saying is there's more pie for everybody, because everybody gets the pie, rather than, you know, a segment of traditional population getting the pie. I think one of the key things as well is if we look at women in the workplace. I keep sort of saying, you know, women's liberation was over 60 years ago, and yet we're still not up at parity. And you know, in a lot of spaces, we're very far from parity, and that is just far too slow. I mean, it's glacial. And I would say that with a group of mainly women at a diversity roundtable a few months ago, and they're all excellent people, but why in those firms are we not seeing that parity level? And we investigated that and looked into it. So we need to go quicker, need to go faster, and I think we need to look at ways of doing that.
Mm. Are you kind of seeing evidence come out that firms that are being a bit more active and conscious around diversity are actually more successful at attracting and retaining that incoming talent?
I think so, and I think as we get into newer generations, they cannot understand the baby boomer generation, the Generation X, and I fall into the back end of Generation X. And, you know, millennials are all in the workforce now, pretty much. And we've got Generation Z and Alpha coming through. And they're going to have very, very different expectations of the workforce. And dealing with our graduates that come through that I talk to, their expectations on coming into a company are far higher than previous. And there is much more choice out there. And a lot of people want to choose a company to work for that fits with their ethics and fits with their understanding. And people are, you know, younger generations are prepared to move. And, you know, it is a point of choice. And if you are going to attract the right talent, maintain and foster the right talent, you have to be cognizant of this, that society and the world is moving on very quickly. You may not understand it, but in some cases, you can either educate yourself to understand it, or you find people that can help you understand this and make your firm successful for the future. And that's got to be the thing for all business leaders, and particularly for HR teams. How do we set ourselves up for the next 20 and 30 years of success? And that isn't going to be looking in the back rearview mirror. It's going to be, where is society going? What is going to happen?
Absolutely. And you spoke about those ethics there. In terms of, you know, the culture that exists in companies, you know, in financial advice, we often talk about the retail distribution review 10 years ago and how culturally a lot of firms have changed since then. How do you think cultures of firms have shifted? How can they shift further?
It depends on the firm. There's hot spots all over the place and there's cold spots all over the place. But in general, you find a lot of firms, bigger firms in particular, will take a long time to change their cultures. And you'll have people that have worked since their very young age to you know, retirement. And they will be as they are, and they will have to have big programs of change. What you also have is smaller organizations who are very much sort of founder focused or relatively run by either the founder or the small management team. And they will either get the whole point of this from a succession perspective, or they won't. And I think you will see pockets of good and pockets of bad. And that is why I say, if you don't do it well, you will likely not get the best talent going forward. And you might be okay for now, but as people start to leave, retire, or whatever, that's when you will start to have trouble.
Speaking of kind of cultural change, I think we should talk about the FCA's sort of new strategy on diversity. So they've recently, made it compulsory that firms with over 250 employees report on employee diversity data, and that is ethnicity, religion, sexual orientation, disabilities, long-term health. But they also want those firms to create targets and report on how they're going to meet those targets. I'm curious, John, how effective do you see this strategy from the regulator being, and what kind of impact could it have?
It is a shame it's come to having to do this. And I do wonder if it's really the regulator that should be doing it. The purpose of it is great. Totally agree with the aims. But looking in particular, yes, it's good to have metrics. And if you can measure things, you can make the change. I worry we'll end up with tokenism. And that is not what we need to be doing. We need to be actually putting systemic change in there. And I hope we will come to systemic change rather than people doing things because they have to. I would rather we got to it. We're doing things because it's the right thing to do. And that's just the way we should do business. And it shouldn't come to the fact. So I think it's a shame we're having to go down this route. I think it would be better if actually we did this across all businesses and not just in financial services. I think it would be far better if the government collected, or ONS collected, better data and actually looked at grades, rankings, salary bandings within those metrics as well. Because what we need to see is that diversity across the whole range of the organization. And as I say, it's not going to happen overnight, and it won't happen overnight, but we need to be moving quicker, and we need to be moving in a more general direction that we represent our customers and clients. And we aren't going to be able to do that everywhere. You know, if you're headquartered in a place where, you know, part of the country where, you know, everybody is white, for example, you're going to struggle to have any representation. And that's kind of fine, because, you know, you are representing your clients in that space. But, you know, there are other metrics and other diverse peoples you can include, and you can make sure you lift through. So I think it's a shame we're coming to that. I think that it'd be interesting to see the metrics that start coming through. I think there'll be some real eye openers. I really hope people are honest with it, because we know statistics can be massaged. And I hope we look at cross sections as well. So we look at, you know, how many, you know, lesbian women there are, how many disabled men there are who are black, all these sorts of things. How can we look at that? And then how does that sit across society and perhaps even more regionally? Mm. And if we can understand that, we can actually understand the whole piece better. And it's not a case of, yeah, I do worry when it's sort of, you know, it's almost like you've got a strict teacher saying you must do this. And I think it's a shame we've got to that perspective and that point. But it is also really highlights what we said earlier on, that progress is not quick enough and firms are not doing it off of their own bat. And that's got to change, I think. But I think it's going to be a fairly blunt tool to start with.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, just thinking about the fact that it has come to the point where the regulator has had to step in with it, with a strategy about it. I wonder, like, if you think, John, that there is still an element of reluctance from firms, or maybe they feel there's a little bit of a taboo around diversity that's preventing any from feeling they can ask questions about their diversity, you know, targets, and is making them a bit reluctant to embrace it. Do you think that that's a factor at play here too?
I think people are afraid to ask questions. I think there is some really bad interpretations of things as well. And I think people need to be more inquisitive. Last year, we had for Pride Month, we had Stonewall and Trans in the City do a number of webinars for us and our staff at Bravura. And it was fantastic, because in having that, it was very much ask me anything, what are the questions you want to ask? And we had staff ask some absolutely fantastic questions, and they were members of staff you wouldn't even think would even be on the webinar, let alone asking questions. And the amount of really good feedback we had, because I didn't understand that, I couldn't grasp it, but now I have that appreciation. So it all comes about from spending some time being human, being inquisitive as to where are you, where have you come from, what is this about, can you tell me? And then at which point you can then have more empathy with where people are coming from. And if you do that, you can then make sure you are cognizant of other people.
And lastly, from me, we've spoken a lot about what individual firms can do. And you mentioned that, you know, regulation has a slight issue in the sense that there are multiple regulators regulating different bits of financial services. But could we expect more from, you know, the advice regulator, the FCA, from their standing in implementing measures to improve diversity in firms?
Yes, I think I think what it would be good to do is, it's all very well putting these policies out there. It would actually be really good if they could join up with some organizations who could help with some training, some advice toolkits. You know, Stonewall have done some great stuff for us in the LGBT plus space. City Mental Health Alliance have done some great stuff for us in the mental health space. Plenty of other organizations we've spoken to with as part of Group Europe. And, you know, we won an award earlier this year for our diversity and inclusivity teams, which is entirely run by staff. You know, the company gives us the tick and gives us a bit of time to do it. It's entirely run by staff, entirely voluntary. And we've been able to, it's one of the things in our employee survey that's come back really, really strongly. It's because we've spent time trying to get people to understand. And I think if a regulator is saying these are policy initiatives, actually the regulator should be doing some signposting. They should be actually trying to lead the industry probably by the nose in some ways and saying, actually, look, here's some resources, here's some online training, here is some webinars. Actually, you know, we're going to put on some learning. And so from there, they don't just you know, wave that stick around. They actually got a carrot and said, here's some resources to do it. And I'm quite sure with a bit of work, they could really make some difference and do some education. And I think, you know, is it something you have to really pull into some of the training and certifications? You know, if we start to look at that, and it's something we're starting to do with our leadership teams, is actually leadership teams have to understand the diverse characteristics of their teams, so that they have the skills and the capabilities and the understanding to lead their teams properly in the future and from now. And I think FCA could do the same.
You've been listening to The Advice Show with myself and senior investments reporter Nicola Blackburn. Today we were joined by principal consultant John Hawkins at Bravura. For any questions, please feel free to tweet us at New Model Advisor or email us at nmateam@citywire.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Today is VE Day. The boys
are newly crowned queen waves from the Belt.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth: cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.